Preliminary remarks here. The next case on our calendar today is A23-0091 in the matter of the determination of the need for an environmental impact statement for the Mankato Motorsports Park. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not sure if you were in court at that time, but we are live streaming our oral arguments now, so you'll see some new technology in the room to help with that. We are still doing an audio recording of the arguments as well. That will be available on our website usually within 24 hours. No other recordings of the oral argument are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and relator will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Time shows on the podium, so you should be able to see that, and the podium is adjustable, so feel free to adjust that if you need to. Counsel for relator, you can start when you're ready. Please introduce yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Marshall Tanick. I represent the relators in this case. There are two of them. There's an organization known as Citizens Against Motorsports Park, which is comprised of a number of residents in the area of Eagle Lake, as well as two individuals who live next door, adjacent to where the proposed project is to be located, Aaron and Michael Gunsel. They are both in the courtroom today. As the court is aware, this is the second time this matter has been before this tribunal. The issue in this case, as it was in the first case, Camp 1, is whether an environmental impact statement is required in connection under the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act in connection with the proposed construction of a large 3-mile motor sports track with other accoutrements to it, which would include some car condos, a restaurant, parking lot, and other facilities. Overall, that area would take up some 230 acres of pristine rural land. There has been a sale of a portion of that property that occurred after the supplemental environmental assessment worksheet was done, which has reduced the footprint from 230 acres to 150 acres, and as a result of that transaction, the city has not gone back and done any additional studies or determinations as to the propriety of the project itself, despite the changes in the nature and size of the project and also the potential impact of it.
Is that change in size reflected in the record before us?
We put that in our supplement, in our reply brief. We attached to our reply brief an appendix reflecting that transaction, which took place this summer after this appeal had already commenced. But there was no further proceedings before the city at that time. However, I'm pointing that out just so you're aware of the facts and the record, is that the 230-acre project that was initially proposed is a different type of project, it's just a smaller project, and about a third of it has been sold to private property, to private owners. And we put that in our appendix in our reply brief.
There wasn't a motion to supplement the record, though.
No, we did not move to supplement the record. Okay. And we don't think that that significantly changes the facts or the legal issues before the court. We just wanted to point that out so the court is aware of that. The ultimate issue in this case is whether the proposed project, whether it's 230 acres or 150 acres, whether this motorsports track gives rise to potential significant environmental effects, which triggers, of course, an environmental impact statement. Initially, the city of Eagle Lake said it didn't. That was appealed, of course, to this court. And in the first case, which I'll refer to as Camp 1, the court remanded it for two particular issues. The two issues that were to be addressed were the effect of the proposed project on wildlife and waterfowl, the wildlife and waterfowl in the area, primarily dealing with noise issues, which had not been addressed before. And secondly, the cumulative effect of the project on greenhouse gas and other related matters. We maintain that neither of those issues on remand were properly addressed, notwithstanding the fact that the city went through a supplemental environmental assessment worksheet, which looks lengthy, and because it is lengthy, it's a large undertaking, but it does not address the key points that this court mandated be taken into account in assessing whether this project should go forward or not. And I think it's noteworthy that this project envisions a large motorsports track with high-performance vehicles operating throughout a good portion of the year, the spring and summer and perhaps early fall. There hasn't been a schedule devised yet, but that's presumably when it would occur.
The fact that the size has been reduced, does that impact at all the activity that was expected and will still be expected in this remaining parcel?
Well, we don't know because the city hasn't addressed that issue at all. We do think, however, notwithstanding the acreage itself has been reduced, it is going to be a more compact area, and therefore there could be some more significant environmental effects because of the concentration of the noise and potential greenhouse gas effects in a more compact area. So the fact that the development has now been reduced from 230 acres to 150 acres doesn't necessarily translate into, well, a third of the problems are solved or alleviated. It doesn't. In fact, it suggests further study is needed to see how the smaller footprint will affect the environment. And that hasn't been done and ought to be done.
In your brief, you request that this court direct the city to do an environmental impact statement as opposed to remanding back for further supplementation to address the issues that you contend have not been adequately addressed. I don't see any case law or statute to support the proposition that this court could require an EIS where if it concludes that there isn't substantial evidence to support the city's revised decision or decision after supplementing.
Sure.
Can you point us to anything that would give the court this authority?
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of a common sense.
Permit a remand to require an EIS?
Sure. It's a kind of a commonsensical approach that would be, we think, save a lot of time and effort and convenience of all parties. I understand that this court's not in the business of ordering environmental impact statements to be done, but the city's had two opportunities now. They've had kind of two bites at the apple, and sending it back again is just going to prolong this whole process. It probably is going to mean that we may be back here yet again. This project has gone on for 5 years, and I think within the equitable authority of the court could say enough is enough. And there are cases, rare as they are, and when appellate courts will say we've had this matter before us two or three times, we are now going to direct how this should be handled. As an example, and I know this is a little bit of an analogy, it might be a little bit remote, but for instance, in some redistricting cases, when a map comes before a court several times and they can't get it right and they send it back and they send it back again, there are occasions when a court will say, we're going to handle this ourselves. I'm not saying you should handle the environmental impact statement yourself, but I am saying that I think the court could, in its discretion, determine that there's been enough time and money has been spent here and the city ought to go forward with an environmental impact statement at this point, having failed twice to properly determine that there is no potential significant environmental effects. And that doesn't, of course, stop the project. That doesn't mean that this project won't go forward. It just means that a more heightened review and examination would be undertaken through an EIS, which, of course, is the province of that kind of approach.
Who bears the cost for an environmental impact statement?
The RGU, the developer or the city, they would have to work that out themselves. But if the city would require an EIS to be done or any government entity, generally that is passed through to the proposed developer of the project. It certainly wouldn't be the citizens of the community who are opposed to the project. And I suspect that that's kind of a cost of doing business in Minnesota. And again, I just want to emphasize, we're not asking, again, to stop the project. We're just saying this project raises a number of questions that this court has asked to be, required to be answered, were not properly answered, and therefore, a more heightened scrutiny is appropriate with an EIS.
So with regard to that, you mentioned there were two issues that
yes, Your Honor.
Were of concern in this court's, or that this court found were not adequately addressed last time, wildlife and the cumulative potential effects of greenhouse gases. And with regard to wildlife, you mentioned that the focus was primarily on noise. Here, there was a noise study done, and that study concluded basically that the effect of, as I understand it anyway, that the effect of the track would, the addition of the track would have a negligible difference in terms of the total noise in the area of the lake, and therefore there wasn't a need to do a specific analysis with regard to any specific birds that may be in the area of the lake. Why isn't that sufficient given that an EIS is supposed to be, or not an EIS, excuse me, an EAW is a brief document which is designed to set out the basic facts necessary to determine whether an environmental impact statement is required for the proposed project?
Well, because they didn't do what the court required them to do. The court said that in order to determine the impact of noise on wildlife, particularly birds, there's a need to identify, survey, and catalog the birds and other wildlife in the area. The city did not do that.
I agree that it doesn't appear the city did an inventory, but I'm not sure this court specifically required an inventory. The court, in our prior opinion, noted that the record contains no evidence about the project's effects on wildlife because there was no attempt to identify, inventory, or catalog the wildlife in the project area.
Right.
But I don't see a direction that required that.
Well, the court said the gravamen was the EAW did not do an inventory. They didn't identify, catalog, and survey. That was why the EAW was insufficient to determine whether there could be potential significant environmental impact effects. And accordingly, this court sent it back to do that, to make that determination. The EAW comes back and says, well, we don't know, we think the effects will be quite negligible, we think they'll be mitigated, but we don't know what kind of species are here, we don't know what birds are here. It seems that they've put the cart in front of the horse. They've said, we don't think their impact will be negligible or minimal, without knowing the wildlife, especially the birds that are in the area, and without knowing what birds are in the area, without doing what this court suggested needs to be done, by identifying, surveying, and cataloging the wildlife and birds in the area, that determination is specious.
And DNR was not particularly excited about the status of those reports.
Well, that's probably an understatement. The DNR said...
I didn't mean to overstate it, so...
The DNR said that there's, quote, no reason, unquote, that this track should be here at all in this pristine rural area. The DNR was not alone in that regard. The PCA weighed in with its concerns, and two of the environmental agencies affiliated with Blue Earth County, where this is located, also expressed those concerns. So this is not a case of a few angry citizens not wanting their lifestyle to be disrupted. This is the significant governmental bodies that have oversight over this area, especially the DNR, pointing out the fallacies of the EAW done by the city on both occasions. And the DNR makes some other comments as well that are...
Specifically, DNR had concern about the wildlife surveys indicating that it might have been just a one-day visit.
I think they referred to it as a snapshot. It was a one-day visit in February when the track doesn't even operate track, well, track doesn't operate at all because it hasn't been developed, but if the project goes forward, the track would not be operating in February anyway. So what the EAW did is take those February, the one-day snapshot, for whatever that's worth, and then try to extrapolate and say, well, in the summer, this factor will come into play and we'll multiply it by this and that. But the point is they still don't know and haven't told anyone because they don't know and maybe don't care what particular wildlife and birds are in the area. Without knowing that, they can't make any reasoned determinations. And that's why an EIS, an environmental impact statement, would be so significant to flesh out those particular issues. However,
beyond noise, are there other potential environmental impacts to wildlife that should have been considered that were not considered?
Well, the noise was the premier one because that's what the court this court focused upon in its remand. And there are some other issues that relate to the cumulative effect of not just the noise but the greenhouse gas effect. So combined, the noise and the cumulative impact of the greenhouse gas effect
and
are
the
two principal concerns.
At least paving, I could be wrong, but I thought there were 30-some acres that were going to be paved or covered up by this project. That's
right,
an area that will no longer be available to wildlife.
Yes, absolutely. There's going to be the area is going to change significantly from its pristine nature now into essentially an industrial park of sorts. In fact, they need industrial zoning here for that because they're already zoned rural. And a significant deficiency here in the EAW itself, there's a recognition. The EAW does recognize that birds are going to be affected. There's going to be displacement. There's going to be effect on reproduction. The DNR talked about reproduction. There's going to be displacement, relocation, and mortality. And that's a word used in the EAW. Some birds will die because of this project during construction and thereafter.
Your time is up. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May I, Judge Cochran, ask one question that
I
was hoping to ask, but I didn't want to interrupt the prior discussion. Mr. Tanik, it seems like your arguments about wildlife and noise are quite site-specific. I'm wondering about your arguments about the cumulative effects of greenhouse gases. Are they site-specific or not? And I guess, in other words, if we were to rule in your favor on that issue, is that tantamount to saying that this type of project could not exist anywhere in the state?
No.
Okay, and why is that?
Well, because the greenhouse gas effects here are cumulative of other features in this area. There's a highway that runs right adjacent to the project. There's the two portions of the designated wildlife lake, Eagle Lake, and there's other features here that would be somewhat distinct. So I don't think, Your Honor, that one would say because of cumulative greenhouse gas effects that this project can't be built anywhere else. And again, that's something that the EIS might give us some insight on, and that's why we again think that an EIS could provide significant enlightenment on both of those central issues in the case.
But wouldn't the consequences of additional greenhouse gases from this project, wouldn't those be realized over a much broader geographic area, not just, this location around the city of Eagle Lake?
Well, it might. I don't know. I mean, again, that's something an EIS might have to address. It's noteworthy, I think, Your Honor, that initially this project was proposed for near the Mankato Airport, and the city of Mankato declined to allow this project there. So the developer came out to this more pristine rural area. And it may be that this project is just the wrong project for any kind of rural area, although it may be that there's areas around that would not be so heavily affected, especially because of having a designated wildlife lake, one of only 70 in the state, right next to the project. So I don't know that it's necessarily preclusive of putting this project in somewhere else. And again, the EIS may answer some of those questions, and it may provide some insight to allow the developer to go forward in some modified plan or to point out that these potential environmental significant effects are greater than we thought. We don't know from the EAW.
Thanks.
Thank you, counsel. For respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
(Clears throat) May it please the court, my name is Paul Reavers, and I represent the respondent, the City of Eagle Lake. This court, or the city, asks that you affirm its determination that the project does not have the potential for significant environmental effects, as there is substantial evidence in the record to support that determination. Now, as the court's
Council,
well aware...
why didn't the city do any sort of inventory of the wildlife in the project area, particularly given this court's opinion in the first appeal? Mm-hmm. You know, the supplement notes a DNR study that was a few days over a few years, but there was no inventory, as far as I can tell, of wildlife that used the project area. I mean, the focus of the EAW was on the lake, and there wasn't even an inventory in that area either. So I'm confused, given our prior decision as to why the consultant that the city hired didn't do any sort of inventory. Isn't that essential for making the determination as to whether there's a potential for significant environmental impacts on wildlife?
So, well, number one, as I read the Court of Appeals decision in the first go-around, you know, that wasn't a requirement. It was noted there. And I would point the court to...
But just as a practical matter, or as a matter of making a determination about whether there's the potential for significant environmental effects on wildlife, which was one of the issues that this court focused on in our prior decision, how can you determine that if you don't know what wildlife are in the area?
Sure. I think Bolton and Mink explained that, and I want to point the court. I think the critical kind of explanation for that is before the City Council, the transcript of the December 5th, 2022 meeting, and the environmental, make sure I get it right, the Natural Resource Project Manager for Bolton and Mink, that's Dan Donier, I believe I'm saying that right, explain that a number of pages, and that's why I think it's important to point that out to the court, the explanation of why we didn't need to do more.
So what exactly, where in the record,
sure.
What pages?
I'm referring to pages, it's 1234 to 1235 and 1238 in the administrative record, and I will, and actually 1232, those are the other pages, but he talks about, and I'll refer the court, so they started with what overall, I'll summarize it this way, and I'll point to a couple of the lines that I think really crystallize the explanation here. And let's keep in mind where this is, and that we've got Highway 14 there next to it already. We've got the airport main, you know, the airport lines up over this. We've got intensive uses. We've got a railroad to the south of Highway 14, and they said, basically, this is a shallow lake. This is a not a high-quality lake. It's an important water feature, but it's a shallow lake. And so they started with what the DNR provided, and this is on page 1234, lines 20 to 25. And he explains, from what we've seen that the DNR has published, it's mostly common ducks and geese, and there's a few shorebirds. And he also talks about the shoreline. So he goes on to say, another thing we look at with this kind of project is the shoreline, and there's not...
Is this in the supplemental EAW? Because that's the decision document.
This is the record explaining, you know, why...
But is this language about common ducks and geese and it being a shallow lake, is this detail in the supplemental EAW?
It's part of the record, Your Honor, supporting the decision. So I would say that this is the explanation for, and the City Council asked, hey, the DNR had these concerns, and this is why, and they said basically they looked at the shoreline, and if it goes on to the second page, this is 1235, you know, looking at, we have mainly cattails on the southern side of the lake by Highway 14. There's no nesting in cattails. And he goes on to explain, so our feeling, an in-depth wildlife study really wouldn't give us anything more than you already know. And he says, if it was a deeper lake, it would attract some different species, but these are mostly common species, local species. And then he goes on to summarize at the end of the meeting, And this is on page 1238 of the record, lines 19 through 25. And he explains, he says, I mean, the DNR has done a one-day site snapshot studies, and they're not finding any species of significance out there. It's a shallow lake. You're not going to have species of significance out there. And again, taking into consideration.
The snapshot, was that the one that was taken in February?
Yep. And that's, they're identifying the birds there. And so we know that it's
I gather the birds aren't going to be the same number of birds or even the species of birds at different times of the year. They're going to be different, won't they?
There could be, but here we already know that there is intensive.
Birds, if they have any common sense, would have gone south by February.
Well,
so those that remained is what the snapshot took. Is that right?
What I'm getting at is there's no evidence in the record at all of any unique species here.
And but the consultant didn't really look very hard to see if there were.
Well, I think they made a reasonable interpretation based on the explanation, again, the pages I point to.
Wait a minute. Well, that talks about, first of all, it's not in the supplemental EAW, which I think raises concerns. But because anyone who's filing comments doesn't have that information, and now there's new information being presented for the first time at the hearing before the city council. Plus, as far as I can tell, no one has even attempted to identify what sort of wildlife, birds or otherwise, are in the project area itself where this racetrack will be constructed. This discussion that you're pointing us to focuses purely on the lake. And while maybe the conclusion is there are a few wildlife, you know, there may be some deer or whatever that go in that area and the impact will be negligible, that may be what the result is. But it's not even discussed in the supplemental EAW what sort of wildlife may inhabit that area or visit that area or use that area when they're migrating.
Your Honor, it's farmland, so it's ag use. We're talking.
But farmland can have wildlife on it. I don't see any scientific documentation in the supplemental EAW or in the EAW to say that there is never wildlife on farmland.
No, but keep in mind, I think the important thing to keep in mind is that almost of the proposed project area that's in the record, you know, 230 acres, 190 acres is going to be put back to natural native grasses and will support habitat.
I guess I'm just struggling with the lack of any discussion. And you may be very well right, and you are a lawyer and I'm a judge, but mm-hmm. we are not environmental scientists.
Right.
And the purpose of this document is to address from a scientific perspective what wildlife are in the area and whether there's potential impacts to those wildlife. Would you agree with that?
I would.
In a brief manner.
Yeah, and I think that's not the issue that how the DNR, you know, we're trying to respond to the DNR's concerns, was focused on the lake, not the agricultural land. I don't believe that's in the record of the concerns stated by the DNR.
But that wasn't what this, I mean, regardless, the standard is there has to be a determination as to whether there's a potential for environmental impacts to wildlife in the project area, and you would agree that where the track is going to be built is part of the project area.
Well, it's certainly part of the project, Your Honor. I look at returning, you know, 190 acres to, you know, pristine grassland, and I do want to make it clear there was a suggestion in the relator's reply brief that was illegal and not allowed by code. I don't believe that's it's inaccurate for two reasons. And I want to make sure that I have that in the record. One is ordinance section, this is the city ordinance, and it's section 3.050. And I think there may be a misunderstanding that any, as long as you're 200 feet beyond a dwelling, the six inch, you know, you have to keep your lawn typically in a community 6 inches. You can't have long, tall grass unless it's a lot. So there's an exemption. So this isn't a dwelling. But more importantly, the state legislature this past session passed a new statute. And that statute is Minnesota Statute, Section 412.925, Subdivision A, and that statute provides that a statutory city or home rule charter city shall allow an owner, authorized agent, or authorized occupant of any privately owned lands or premises to install and maintain a managed natural landscape. And managed natural landscape is defined to include native grasses. So the notion that can't be a mitigation is contrary to, I mean, the legislature, again, I think the ordinance allows it, but even if it didn't, it would be preempted right now by the legislative action that just took pass this last session. And I think that's the overriding thing. There's substantial mitigation over everything, too, with returning a substantial portion of this property to natural grasses. And the city did...
Can I ask you a question about the noise study?
I'm sorry?
I have a question for you about the noise study, if you're...
Sure. Yeah, that's what I was going to go into, so
okay,
good.
Good. So in the response to comments from the DNR on page 259 of, well, it's not 259, sorry, I'm looking at that number, on page 1172 of the administrative record, maybe that's not the right page, is it the next page? Well, anyway, somewhere around there, I'm not finding the exact page currently, but in response to comments from the DNR, yeah, here it is. So 1172, the city or consultant said that noise from highway and development cannot be accumulated.
And here's,
can you translate that for
sure.
me?
They're
I
different.
Think I know what they're saying, but I just want to make sure.
The highest, so the most...
They're not additive, is that what it's saying?
Yeah, I mean, the most noisy, they're taken into consideration, but the noisiest, the highway is different when the noisiest, so they don't... They're not the same time. So we're looking at when the track is operating, it's not the same when the highway is the noisiest. And I think the footnote, and this is on page 757, kind of explains how they did the math on that. Because I, frankly, last night was going through that myself, trying to work through that. And I think there's a misunderstanding. I think the DNR misunderstands that they did take into consideration the noise of 14. And it kind of explains how they did the math in that footnote. So that's why I'd point the court to explain that. And really, the bottom line is with the analysis they did was, and this is without any mitigation. Keep in mind, there's a berm and a 20-foot sound wall. This is without that the difference between just highway, you know, project versus the noisiest that the road is versus the noisiest that here, it's negligible. And this is without mitigation. And we have in the record the other point that, and they did the modeling too. I mean, they noted this on sound walls and berms do dissipate sound. So this is even worst case scenario without any mitigation. It's less than one decibel. Three decibels is you can't even hear it, a human. So we're talking negligible. With mitigation, there's relatively no impact on that. And that's, at the end of the day, we want to give the city, the ultimate decision maker, the land use decision maker, the information necessary to provide for mitigation or address the concerns. There's no, that negligible thing is not going to impact. That's a reasonable determination by the Bolton and Menk. We're entitled to look at the expert and rely on that. And there's been nothing in the record to put other than speculative concerns that, hey, we want you to do more. They're really asking us almost to do an EIS as part of this project, a very detailed study that isn't necessary. And again, the experts explained that to the city. They had a reasonable basis. We can debate it, but at least there's a reasonable basis for the city to say, we're going to listen to the experts that were provided, and we're ultimately going to say, yep, they did the work that was necessary. You know, did we engage in reasoned decision making? I submit the record supports that we did. And
can I turn you to the greenhouse gas question for
sure.
a second? At one point, the city concludes that the project is not anticipated to have an impact on adjacent air travel. Mm-hmm. But in the document itself, it says that on page in the supplement on page 2, admin record page 923, it says that as this is a destination course, the location needed to be near the Mankato Regional Airport. So the determination that the project is not anticipated to have an impact on air travel seems seems to be contradicted by the statement in the supplement that the location needed to be near the Mankato Regional Airport. The only reason to locate it there is if people are going there.
Well, and I think that the idea is there's just no idea of what.
So my question for you is, what evidence supports the conclusion that the project is not anticipated to have an impact on adjacent air travel?
I think there's no evidence in the record how much somebody would use it. It's speculation to determine. We have no idea if anyone is actually going to use the airport and whether there's, so.
But it was located there to allow for that.
I acknowledge that one of the reasons for citing it there was to have the opportunity for that, but there's nothing in the record to suggest how often or how do we even incorporate that? And I guess if I may just finish that thought, Your Honor. I see my time is up.
Yes, you may, please.
That too, keep in mind from an environment, you know, from the greenhouse gas stuff. And I think that's the last point I want to make is the city went through a very comprehensive review of that, but they point out that too, there is no regulatory standards. You know, and this is on page 982 of the EAW, you know. In other words, while this project will contribute to climate change generally, existing scientific tools do not allow local or state regulatory authorities to quantify the specific effects of a particular project on global regional climate change impacts and therefore cannot be added cumulatively to other project impacts. So that information, an EIS is not going to help the city figure out conditions to address this. So I submit the city did appropriate decision making. There's substantial evidence to support the city's decision, and I ask that you affirm the city's decision. Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Thank you. The law and this court have made it pretty clear that in these kind of determinations, undertaking an EAW to decide whether there's a need for an environmental impact statement, the decision makers have to take a hard look at the facts and the issues. In this case, the supplemental EAW after this court's decision in Camp 1 barely looked at all at the key issues noted by this court. And as previously indicated, and as you've pointed out,
there was a detailed noise study and there was a calculation of greenhouse gas emissions. So I guess it looks to be more than barely, but well, that's I understand your perspective.
But they certainly didn't look at all at a key issue, and that is what wildlife is in the area. So making the determination whether there will be potentially significant, whether there's a potential for significant environmental effects without knowing what species, what animals, what wildlife are in the area is in fact not looking at all. And they could have. There's ways they could have done that.
The DNR was asking for, I believe, an in-depth study of wildlife. And to me, that sounds something more like something you would do in an EIS than an EAW, because an EAW is supposed to be a brief document setting forth the basic facts.
Well, that train has kind of left the station, Judge, in terms of being a brief statement, because the EAW is a rather lengthy statement, but that's why the DNR feels so strongly about this project, and that's why the citizens in the area do too, is that it does need an EIS. That kind of proves the point that many of these issues can't be addressed in a, quote, brief worksheet. There's some significant scientific and other issues that need a more in-depth study. That's why we think that the EAW that was done here lacks substantial evidence and, more significantly, is unreasonable in not heeding the court's call for to identify, survey, and catalog the wildlife in the area. In fact, there was the supplemental EAW does address that to some extent as far as birds. The supplemental EAW does recognize that the effect of this racetrack will be to cause, and I'm quoting from there, the supplemental EAW, increased stress, displacement, and relocation, along with mortality of birds in the area. Those are strong words, and that's in the supplemental EAW, rather. But they didn't go on to elaborate on that, although the DNR also weighed in, and the DNR pointed out that the stress levels that will be increased during construction and afterwards on the wildlife will also have result in a deviation in reproductive patterns within the wildlife community. So there are some significant effects even in the supplemental EAW without even analyzing what species or what animals or wildlife are in the area. As far as the noise issue, I think one could say, just stepping back a little bit from all the scientific modeling and all that, that the EAW's position basically is, and the city's position here is, there's a lot of noise already in the area, especially Highway 14, so what's a little bit more noise? Well, I think that kind of relates to our reference and analogizing in our brief to the thin skull plaintiff rule. The city is saying there's so much noise now, a little bit more won't matter. In fact, that's why it's so important to control noise here and limit noise, because there already is a lot of noise. And the impact of additional noise, the cumulative effect of that, is undoubtedly going to have a deleterious impact on the wildlife, as the EAW already recognizes. As far as mitigation, I think the strongest witness, perhaps, or strongest statement on the mitigation issue comes from the mayor himself. The mayor of the city of Eagle Lake, head of the city council, stated that he felt that mitigation efforts will not be effective here in addressing what he referred to as a problem that can't be fixed or reversed. He was referring to both the noise problems and the effect on the wildlife, as well as the degradation of Eagle Lake. That's the mayor himself, and as noted in our brief, pointing out that the supposed mitigation efforts that the city is proposing are not going to be sufficient. And essentially, what the EAW does, the supplemental EAW does, is abdicate and contract out mitigation. The EAW says, well, mitigation will be taken care of by the DNR through the permitting process. That's insufficient. There has to be some strong, specific indications of what the mitigation is under the Pope County Mothers case. So we maintain in sum that the supplemental EAW does not comply with this court's directive in Camp 1. We would ask this court to remand with a directive to do an environmental impact statement, or at a minimum, at least remand for further consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both parties for your helpful arguments here today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.